In Randolph County and from us around, everybody loves that smooth sound. Radio and Sparta means WHCO.
Car folks on the go, it's 1230.
That's WHBO. We love to have you with us. We want you all to know. You're welcome on WHCO. Randolph County.
Country 1230 and 97.3 WHCO. Time now for the People Speak program. We're taking your calls at 443-2121 or toll free 877-443-1230. Now, the People Speak.
And good morning, 927. I'm Jeff, and you're listening to The People Speak. Guest today is going to be Congressman Mike Voss. Congressman, how are you doing this morning?
Great, Jeff. How are you?
Not too bad. Trying to adjust to the time change. Other than that...
That is rough. It is rough on everybody. But I think my grandkids this weekend were that I was noticing that they're having trouble adjusting to that.
So I know there's been talk in the past about, you know, just changing that, but I mean... You know, I mean, we're pretty well used to it. We grew up with it, so
we're used to it if we grew up to, with it and everything like that. And where you get the block from people that say don't change it. If you were a state that's a little bit higher, well, for instance, the way it might be even in the northern part of Illinois, but definitely in the northwest, by not making that change, that's done for a couple reasons. It used to be for farming practice stuff like that, but it's also for so the kids are not going to school in a dangerous time where they can't be seen in the dark. And so that has a whole lot to do with what they're doing. And when we were talking about that on the national level, many of those northwestern flyover country states, their members of Congress were going, well, now, wait a minute. We've got a safety issue and, you know, the concerns they might have there. Of course, that's something that they could also adjust through their school boards, too. But that's been the idea and intent behind it, some of the arguments that have been back and forth.
Right. I'll tell you what, we got a break here. Let's go ahead and get that out of the way.
Yeah, sure.
And we will come back and talk with Congressman Mike Voss here on The People Speak. We'll be back right after this. 9:32, I'm Jeff, and this is The People Speak. Again, talking today with Congressman Mike Voss. And Congressman, I guess one of the big things in the news right now is going on out on the West Coast there, but it can have far-reaching effects, the Silicon Valley banking issue.
So let me try to explain to you how quick this went awry, what we're hearing, what rumors are out there, and understand this, that I am not on the Bank and Finance Committee. However, Pat McHenry is, as well as Blaine Lutefemeyer from Missouri. This is their expertise. But let me tell you what I do know for sure. In November, they were actually a stable bank, okay? However, some bad moves on their part. One is the tech companies that are out there is who they've been feeding a lot of. And with that, they basically were giving out loans. And what we're discovering, too, is one of their chief officers was more worried about their agenda as far as being all-inclusive and not necessarily, you know, I don't care how woke you are. But you have to have certain stability with banks because it's not based on your wokeness. It's based on your ability to have the loan and repay a loan and also the level of loans in which you give out. So we think that there's a lot of this that went on with this particular bank over a short period of time. Then whenever the tech companies started to fail and also they were giving out a tremendous amount of loan money based on what happened with COVID. And so they're obviously investigating that. The administration has said, you know, that anybody covered under the $250,000, which is already under the national bank that we keep to secure people so we don't have the crash and the run on the banks, and it's how your money is secured in your bank. The cap is at $250,000. Well, a lot of these companies are well above that. the feds so far have said that they will cover the others to make them whole, but I don't know how we're going to do that, because at what point do you finally say you made bad mistakes? And now we've got another bank in New York talking about theirs. Now we want to make sure, find out what their situation is, because I'm afraid this particular bank in New York is too politically connected, as far as I'm concerned, from what I'm hearing right now. Understand, this is all early conversation, and I'm talking about things I've heard. I can't back them up with facts yet because we're so early in the process. And understand this, the Committee of Jurisdiction is going to be very, very aggressive at finding out what caused this bank to fail. What's the concern that we're having with the one in New York? Or is the one in New York just kind of got an attitude of, if you're going to bail out one, you're going to bail out the rest of us. And then when do you stop? And when do you stay? We're not socialists. We're not going down this path. There are certain things we need to do. Now, there's also conversation about, from several members, when was the last time that we raised that cap on what is secure? Now, whenever they do this, is it taxpayers paying for it? Well, it is taxpayers paying for it, but not through their taxes, but with banking fees that will be charged throughout the nation. If somebody fails, it's a security like we've already got. But the question is now, many members are talking about, is that cap at 250 the right way to go, or does it need to be raised? And when was the last time it was raised? So these are all things that we've got to look into the banking industry on. Problem is how much of that debt is owed and owned by foreign investors. That's always a scary factor. That's why we also have these committees of jurisdiction, so they can dig deeply into it and make sure whatever we do it in a way and a fashion that is, one, secure for the nation, and two, that's secure for the people of the nation, and three, that we put it in place so that it is not something that happens on a regular basis and we get the economy, we don't destroy our economy by trying to help.
Of course, the thing that pops into mind right away, you know, when you hear the information, this is 2008, you know.
Yeah, and that's just it. We can't keep going down a path of bailing bad players out. This still boils down, and we'll see what the investigation is, but the early is that because this person was wanting to advance the agenda of wokeness, was put in a position of power in the bank and was not qualified for the position in which they were placed. So we've got to be careful. It doesn't matter whether banking or schools or whatever. Quit playing games with how you feel, and let's actually use people who are wise in these positions, and that's how it normally occurs. Not to advance a cause of advancing a certain gender or advancing a certain race or advancing. The most qualified person should be the person that you have in the position so that the wisdom can prevail. And if you don't go down that path, in other words, truly don't look at somebody's skin color or gender, but look for the best of the best. And this is in every industry. But right now, what we're seeing is, and that's what I think the investigation is going to show on this bank, they just made a choice because they wanted to put somebody in there that they could reveal how woke they were.
Yeah, it's like we've got enough issues right now that the country needs to be dealing with. We don't need, you know, banking issues popping in there as well. But, I mean, that's just something that...
That's right.
Another thing I noticed, a constitutional amendment that you proposed that would ensure... what I believe should be only U.S. citizens voting in elections.
Well, our right to vote and have a voice in government is sacred. It really is. Everywhere around the world, the United States is envied because of our citizens' right to vote. So I co-sponsored that resolution, by the way, and it prohibited individuals who are not American citizens from voting in our elections. Look, liberal cities like New York and D.C., have tried to allow non-citizens to vote, and that's in their local election. And they can argue that, oh, well, it's local control, but no, you're allowing people to, it's insanity, in my estimate. Illegal immigrants and foreign agents should not have a say in our government at all. And so think about this. When you allow D.C. to pass local laws, and remember, they're a territory, they are not a state, so they don't actually qualify under the 10th Amendment, but when you allow them to allow non-citizens to vote, you do know that we have foreign diplomats that probably don't have our United States interests at heart, but yet we're going to let them vote? Does that not seem a little bit silly to most. Well, I'm going to say that all of your listeners, unless, yeah, I'm not sure which listener would come up to me and go, no, I really think they should have the right to vote. Really? And who came up with this idea? And why? The only reason they would come up with this is if it's going to advance their political, let's look at it really. What they're wanting to do is the Democrats believe that they will vote Democrat if you give them the right to vote, and therefore they were going to give them the right to vote to stack the ballot box. So that's it. And what's really wild is in these cities, I don't know what the Democrats have to worry about anyway, because most times Republicans can't get elected anyway. And that proves that with what they did in D.C., with the laws they passed. We actually passed a bill, and Biden is going to sign it, that tells D.C. that they're not passing those anti-crime bills, okay, that let people out early, increase crime, defund police, all of this stuff. We actually took that from them, and it was all but unanimous. And there were several, I guess there were several Democrats that chose not to vote for it on the House, but it was unanimous out of the Senate. And then Biden said originally he wasn't going to vote, or he was going to veto it. But then all of a sudden he realized how unpopular that statement was. He came back and said, okay, he's going to sign the bill. Now he's got his left group that says, well, you said you'd veto it. And then they're arguing back and forth. But this has got to stop. And even Democrats understand it, that joined with us to send this message to Biden. And look, why in the world? This is so wild, and I want to explain this. So even and understand the member of Congress and understand that it's a territory, but she, the one that's elected from D.C., that has the right to be in committee, has the right to have input, but doesn't have a right to vote on final passage of legislation, okay? Or her vote doesn't count for final passage of legislation. I don't know if people know that. There are, for the five territories, there is one member of Congress, a sitting member of Congress. They have the right to be there. They have the right to have input, but they do not have the power to vote on final legislation. Well, she was protesting the fact that we were going to override this, and she was over at Union Station. And while she and her group were protesting at Union Station in the middle of the day, a carjacking went on right in front of them. That lets you know why it is we need to make sure that D.C. is safe, not only for the people who live there, but also for the amount of people that come from my district and every other district in this nation and from all over this world to come to the capital of this United States. And remember this, D.C. is under our jurisdiction as a territory, not a state. So they have their own local governance, but the final say-so is decided by Congress, we the people of the United States, on how that city was run, because that city was created as a territory, so no state could take claim to it, but all states could. And this is not the first time that we've overrode, it's the first time in a long time, the city council and took charge. Actually, in the early and mid-90s, we actually took control of the city, because then Marion Barry, who was the mayor at the time, if you remember, he was elected mayor, really blew it, went to jail on cocaine charges, came back and was reelected mayor. I know you can't make this stuff up. And was reelected mayor, broke the city so bad they couldn't pay their police and firemen and every other city office. So the federal government came in, took it over, cleaned up the city, got it straightened out, got it on back on track, then turned it back over to them. Now they went and they've elected a city council that, just so you know, the mayor vetoed the bill that we're talking about, and then the city council override the mayor's veto. Now, let me tell you who stood up with us when we did that was the local police departments and the national police departments, because they realized how crazy this was and how crazy this agenda was that they were going down. It's almost as crazy as the state of Illinois doing this. Oh, wait, yes, we remember the state of Illinois has been doing this.
And on the voting aspect, I mean, I sit there and look at it. It's like if I went to Germany or France or someplace and said, I want to vote in your election, there's no way.
They'd say fat chance.
Yeah, exactly.
So, they'd say fine, become a citizen.
Yeah, right, exactly. We got another quick break here. Let me throw that in real quick.
All right, sounds great.
And we'll be right back and talk some more with Congressman Mike Bost here on The People Speak. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Again, talking today with Congressman Mike Bost. And Congressman, another amendment that has been passed by the House now, and I don't know where it stands on the Senate or whatever, but deals with considering rural areas when dealing with issues that consider inflation?
Yeah. So currently, and this was, this is basically my amendment when we were moving forward with a piece of legislation, and all of a sudden we realized how they were fibbing as we're trying to deal with inflation. Okay, period. Across the board. Right now, the inflation, which is calculated based on the consumer price index, okay, that's the amount of goods purchased. We always thought, well, that would just be nationwide, everybody, right? But however, the consumer price index, under its own rules, only reflects purchase power of urban customers. Think about that. So only urban customers. So what my bill did was calculates all customers, okay? So if it's rural areas or it's military personnel or farm households, they all feel the impact of inflation. And the fact that they are not calculated in the consumer price index just seemed very strange to me. And so we recently passed that provision, and I introduced it as an amendment to a larger bill dealing with inflation, and it would require the president to take impacts on rural communities, farm families, and military personnel before enacting executive orders based on his inflation numbers while calculating it using the consumer price index. Seems only natural. Why in the world would you only go to people from urban areas? Unless it's just a lazy way to do the calculation from the people that are involved with doing the calculation. So basically that's what my bill does. And it only makes sense because this inflation, if you think it hasn't impacted our farmers, just ask them what it's costing to put their crops out this year. Look at the price of eggs. So obviously there's been an impact not only to the urban areas, but to the entire nation. And so this makes sure that we're doing our calculations right.
Right. I mean, you've got to consider, like you said, people everywhere, not just the ones who live in the cities. I mean.
And it was really interesting. The debate was interesting because there is a member that quite often, if you watch C-SPAN and watch debates on the House floor, Democrat member Jamie Rossman, and Jamie himself, who's very, very liberal, entered into a colloquy. I know a lot of people think that when we're on the House floor, we're actually able to debate. We are debating, but everything has to go through the chair. Unless there's a permission to ask questions back and forth, you always have to do that in committee. You're just making statements on the floor. But we actually got into that discussion on the floor because he said, I think it's an interesting bill and I'm going to support it. He said, but you do know that it may actually bring the consumer price index down because quite often it's cheaper to live in a rural area than it is in an inner city area. I said, it may. But why in the world would we not? He said, I agree with your bill. And I said, so it doesn't matter what occurs, but we need to calculate using input from everybody, no matter where they live. So it was an agreement that we had.
Okay. Another one I see that actually was just introduced the end of the last week would increase penalties for pipeline eco-terrorism.
Yeah, this is a bill that I've carried before, and it's really strange to me that certain Democrats stand against it, but what we have is we have these groups, these anti-energy groups, okay, and anti-fossil fuel groups and everything, and they will go out and they will terrorize our pipelines all across this nation, and they will... Quite often, they'll take high-powered rifles and shoot them. They will take and go out and turn a valve loose and shut the valve off or break a valve or all of these things, which is, one, is even more dangerous to the environment. But not only that, it is a terrorist act. Whether they're doing it for clean energy or just to try to destroy the nation, whichever, this bill basically gives some teeth in the law for the punishment more than just destruction of property in these remote, well, not only remote locations, but any location. But the reason why it is so subject is because a lot of it goes to remote locations. So we've got that bill being moved. It's a common sense piece of legislation. We can't have these terrorists out there destroying our energy sources, even though right now we've got an administration that they're destroying our energy sources just by the rules that they're using. But this is a bill that I've carried for many years. I hope when it gets through the Senate this time, it's a common sense bill, and we're hoping it moves on.
Congressman, got a couple minutes left here. Anything else you wanted to...
You know, one thing we need to just touch on, if we can, understand that Biden, presented his budget this week, which is really wild because, you know, he's 30 days late on his budget, which is, if I had to present a budget like this, I'd be 30 days late too, I guess. But it was really wicked. We're going to be fighting it and changing it. It actually did some really bad things. It increases spending to $2.2 trillion over the next 10 years. It increases the federal deficit. It will increase about $300 billion under his proposal. It $1.326 trillion in tax hikes for the American businesses, killing American jobs. All of these things are things. Now, here's the bright side. Remember, the power of the purse is not in the president. He gives a suggested budget, and then we come back with a budget working through both the House and the Senate. We'll be doing that and hopefully come up with some sensible operations of the nation that can keep our inflation down, keep our country safe as far as our military is concerned, and keep our economy safe and try to straighten this economy out.
All right, Congressman, thanks for taking time out to talk with us today.
Jeff, thank you, and look forward to speaking with you next month.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Congressman Mike Bost here on The People Speak this morning. I'm Jeff. We will talk to you again next time. Have a great day.